I think the biggest thing is when we go through our season and we look back at the season, we don't just focus on the good or only focus on the bad, because I think then you lose sight of the big picture. There were some times where some really good plays happened that the scheme might have been terrible and, you know, we just have a freak quarterback, or there might have been some plays that might not have went well and the execution wasn't good enough. But if I got in that situation again, would I call the same play? And so really just take an opportunity to just kind of dive in and just kind of look at everything in a whole. And one thing I can tell you, we obviously have to get better.
Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady, who sat with us yesterday, saying we got to get better. You know, one thing Brady did there kind of gives you, you know, we're all just like armchair quarterbacks and coordinators and, you know, guys that yap on the radio and men and women that just yell from the seats. But
there are no arms on these chairs.
That's true.
I have to say that.
He said something funny, Sal. He said, I'm Josh's biggest fan and I'm Josh's biggest hater. Like the idea that, I'm the offensive coordinator. I know when he does stuff wrong or when – you know,
someone's got to tell him when he does something wrong.
He's amazing. But he kind of said, like, I must be Josh's biggest hater, because he's the one sitting there telling him, like, this wasn't okay. And in that clip right there, sometimes a play looks great, and just because your free quarterback bailed you out.
Yeah.
So I think Brady's always been pretty good about whatever. He's got a football player's mindset, right, about sometimes something works out and it was wrong. And sometimes you do your best and it didn't hit, but you're okay with it.
Process over results.
Yeah, there's a play with Kincaid. He and Allen miss on a play, but he was happy about it because of something went right. They saw it the same way, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, Brady's an interesting interview to kind of, you know, chew through offense with like that. I think he's been good the last couple seasons. Sal's sitting with us for a couple more minutes. You can give us a call. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Yesterday, pads came on. We talked about that a little bit. Here's a follow-up from something we talked about earlier in the week. Matt Milano. Oh. I asked you, like, what version of Matt Milano are the Bills going to get? And it seems that if 5 days into camp, the version is the Matt Milano you know.
I think the version I've been seeing is the Matt Milano we've seen in the Buffalo Bills, in a Buffalo Bills uniform for most of his career. It's really just about him staying healthy. I mean, he is just really making himself known out here, right? I mean, we know the player, but now you're seeing, okay, he looks no different than what he's looked at his peak form, kind of, you know, during practices. Can that sustain? Can he stay healthy, stay on the field? All of that, I'm telling you, if he can, he could be in for a really, really big year.
Yeah. I mean, Do you remember, was he banged up in the playoffs last year?
Yeah, so.
Like, there was a question about there that wasn't
so
there.
So what
going.
Happened was, he was still coming off the injury.
Right.
Played maybe 4 games, but then you're in a spot where rests against week 18. So he didn't have a ton of time, but he was crescendoing.
Yeah.
Gets to the playoff game against the Broncos, plays every snap on defense, right?
Right.
We talked about that. I think Dorian Williams didn't play a snap.
Right.
Goes to the Ravens game. Remember, he has the knockdown of the 2-point conversion.
Right.
Against the Ravens, right?
Yeah, because they two failed 2-point conversions.
Right. So he's playing well. At the end of that game, he wasn't on the field the last few plays. Like, that's kind of weird.
Right.
The Bills didn't really say anything about it, and then we realized and found out he had a hamstring injury that he played through against the Chiefs. How serious it was, I'm not sure. He still played, but, I mean, I got the feeling, just the way it was talked about, that if it was a regular season game, maybe they would have sat him.
Right.
But he played, and he played in the Chiefs game, you know, so he did deal with that, and that's the thing that you have to be weary of, right? I mean, he's over 30 years old. The way he plays, the stress he puts on his body is why sometimes it can break down sometimes, and that's what happened. Now, nothing you can do about a broken leg. It's happened twice in his career now.
Yeah.
Broke his leg his rookie year against the Jets. Remember that? Down in the end zone, gets rolled on, and then he breaks his leg in London on a pile. There's nothing you can do about that, right? He also had the biceps injury.
Yeah.
Right? At home, and it was back in Orchard Park after preseason.
Okay.
He has the biceps injury. The freak accidents, right? But these are because of the stress he puts in his body, the way he works out, the way he plays. He's a football player, and things like that are going to happen sometimes.
Because really, like, I guess you got a little of it last year. Maybe he's got the hamstring he's battling through in the AFC Championship game. I feel like the talent level, most would think the potential for this linebacker duo, especially if you want to make it a trio, if Dorian Williams, you know, ever gets in with like special packages, but that Bernard and Milano has the capability of being one of the best linebacker duos in the league. And really, we still haven't seen it for a long stretch.
Right.
You know, like, the hope would be that this season will be that. I know Bernard's already got a little bit of a nagging thing now, but that duo, Sal, I think the ceiling is crazy high, and we just, again, maybe the Baltimore game is like one of the rare instances we've actually been able to see it.
Yeah, I agree. And it is a shame. Can we imagine if between the two of them, if we had been always able to have Matt Milano and Troy Bernard on the field, like, as a pairing, right? And
right.
It just hasn't been able to happen. So you're right. They could be really good together. And now you have Bernard that's hurt right now.
Right.
Right. It just seems like they can never match up. We did see it for a little bit. It'd be great. They just play so well off each other, guys. They really do. They know each other so well. They've been around.
Yep.
You know, it's Troy Bernard's fourth year now. Right. He's been in those meeting rooms with Matt for the last 3+ years. Mm-hmm. And they just know each other, how they think, instinctual. And I just think they work such in concert with each other.
Sal Capaccio, one quick positional note. We haven't really talked with you too much about what's happening at right tackle with Spencer Brown missing some time. And no updated timeline on him, right? We found out day one was it's a flare-up and nothing since. But Tylon Grable, like, how are things going at the right tackle spot, and what is it looking like? If Spencer Brown is missing any time, what's the plan?
So you have to think Tylon Grable would be the kind of front runner, but I would say do not count out Ryan Vandermark. He has been getting some time there as a swing tackle. He was the swing tackle a couple of years ago, and whenever he's had to play, he's played well, yeah. Ryan Vandermark. He's a guy they really like. He's an athletic young guy, big guy. He's played there, and he's been getting some time there as well. Remember, though, Tylon Grable kind of took that spot, and Ryan Vandermark was the he was a healthy scratch last year during games. I wouldn't count out Ryan Vandermark for the swing tackle job. I still think it would be Tylon Grable's spot, and what I mean by that is to fill in for Spencer Brown if he were to go down. I think one thing is Spencer Brown's really good. I think the Bills are really happy, though, with the depth they have to – you know, a replaceable guy if you have to go into some games with him.
Yeah. The one thing that's tough about that spot, I'm trying to remember, Brown was the one I heard talking about this, or maybe it was even Joe O, that part of Brown's job is that awareness of when Josh kicks out of the pocket and rolls to his right, because then you almost become like you got to kick out with him and become that like personal protector in front of him. And that's something you pick up, I think, playing with him over the years. And I wonder – not to say that it would be bad. Maybe Josh just wouldn't do it as much. I wonder what that would look like with Grable or – We did see a little of Vandermark last year.
Yeah. And Vandermark, was it – did Vandermark play left tackle for Deion a couple years ago against against the Patriots?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I think he did that as well. It's a great point, Joe. There was a video I posted yesterday, maybe 2 days ago, on the O-line working. There was a drill.
Yeah.
And they were doing like a box-out drill. They were starting shoulder to shoulder. So I'm – standing here, you're standing there. If you're watching on the video stream, I'm standing here, you're standing there. And Coach Cromer blew the whistle, and you had to turn backward to try to, hey, my guy's spinning, I got to box him out. It became like a basketball box out. Mm. It's a drill that they worked on, actually.
Yeah.
And that reminds me of what you're saying. Like, Josh gets out of the pocket, where's my guy? Oh, he's here, I got to spin, I got to box him out. I can't even get in front of him.
Right.
And they actually were working on that.
Hmm. All right. When does Spencer Brown become concerning for you?
It's getting there pretty quickly because I haven't seen anything about him.
Yeah. And back injuries.
He's out there with his team watching and, you know, walking around. But
he was part of the Josh Allen 99 reveal, Madden 99 reveal video.
I did see that.
The offensive linemen are out there to show him he got the 99 rating in Madden. And Spencer Brown's there for that. So he's here. But
he's got to get on the field. And I think it's more concerning because he's had back injuries and back issue. That's the issue. And that's the reason it's heightened in my book.
Yeah.
So, by the way, speaking of that video, did you see Deion Dawkins' hat?
No.
Sal, did you see it?
I have not. Is it 99 or something?
How offended is Sal going to be by Deion Dawkins' hat?
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw it. Here you go, Sal.
It's got the Yankees.
Oh, what are we doing, Deion? You can't get the Yankees Mets on the same cap.
And the Mets on the same cap. Mm. Is that a foul? Hat foul?
I think so.
Both logos.
He's a New York fan, maybe.
What if he's making a statement, I play for a New York football team and I like New York baseball teams?
Both of them?
Yeah, right.
Both of them.
He's like, we all play in New York, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I looked up. So on the site where I'm assuming he got the same hat, they have – I don't know if this is a new – is this the new upside-down hat?
Tell me they have, like, Dodgers, Angels.
Well, there's Dodgers and Yankees.
Oh, wow.
There's a Red Sox and Yankees hat, which to me is
wild.
Ridiculous, that one.
Now, if you
that's one that I would wear just – because I don't like either team – just to make mad every fan – like, both at the same time.
If you wore a cap that said had an AFC East logo or something, and then had the AFC logos,
like all four,
yeah, I think it'd be okay. Like, no,
I wouldn't wear that.
Okay, then I would think you like work for the league or the or something. You work something in the office, right?
What's this?
I don't know.
What is this company? What are they doing?
It's called Culture Kings.
Culture
They're doing multiple. Now there are other hats where it's like it's the there are two teams in the same market. Like a college team.
Bills, Sabres.
Are
you about to tell me they have, like, Auburn and Alabama on the same hat?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Yankees, Red Sox.
I saw Yankees, Red Sox.
I'm telling you this. If they put Syracuse, Georgetown on that cap, all right, I'm buying it just so
that
I
would
can
be
do things with it.
Do they have
you're not going to put Michigan, Ohio State,
the same cap? I mean, might have to ask Jordan Hancock. Jordan, what would happen if you
saw these hats for a cap?
Wow.
All right, guys, I got to get running.
All right, thanks, Sal.
You got it.
Sal Capaccio here from training camp. Well, yeah, what?
Let me find the ones where there's multiple logos.
This is exactly the spot where it's like, oh, yeah.
We've gone too far?
No. Anytime this happens, like, oh, this is a new thing that's happening. And when you're old like me, you try really hard not to sound like you're just like, oh, that can't happen. And then I sound like the oldest guy on earth. Like you and your upside down logos. Like,
I'm scrolling through those right now. You want an upside down Diamondbacks logo? It looks like a V.
Yeah, of course. Yes.
Yep.
Who wouldn't want an
upside down Pirates? Of course.
Upside down Diamondbacks logo. what do they call the double hats? What are they?
I thought it was two logo. I was looking at them yesterday. Where'd they go? I think you just search two logo hats and you're gonna find a list of them.
Jeez. Well, all right. I mean, I guess we're doing stuff like that. Yankees and Red Sox on the same hat.
Yeah,
nuts. Anthony in Buffalo is on the line. Anthony, good morning.
I don't know how I feel about that Yankees and Red Sox hat. That's crazy, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's almost against. But, all right, so, hey, guys. So I'm just kind of curious, you know, if there's anybody that you guys have seen that might stand out in camp, you know, some of the new rookies. Is there somebody that, you know, you look at and say, this kid's going to have a good year? And then my second one is that rookie tight end that we picked up that's, like, known for being a blocker. How does he look, and, you know, is there a scheme of some sort for him yet, or if it's too early? But have a good day, guys. Enjoy camp, and here we go. Go Bills.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. On the rookies, you know, as you're saying, like a guy that's standing out, I'm eager. I'm going to hang for practice today. I've missed the last couple. Sunday, of course, and then yesterday I couldn't stay. But I want to see if Keon Coleman can continue to stack really strong practices because, I mean, listen, if he becomes this weapon and this whatever, exactly what they want him to be. I'll just say it that way. If he becomes exactly what they want him to be, not, you know, I'm not looking for Jamar Chase out here, just the guy they think they can count on to be a big, strong target, like that's super important. What I want is someone for his fourth and five, and it doesn't matter that they know where the ball might be going because – it's such a reliable connection that Allen and Shakir, Allen and Coleman, Allen and Kincaid, they've got such a good chemistry there. And, you know, every time Keon has a good day, you might think, like, it's only camp, right? Or this is true of any player. It's true of rookies, too. I'm sorry, Anthony, you asked about rookies. This is true of new players, Elijah Moore, Josh Palmer. Like, these practices have to matter to the quarterback himself. Seven straight days of good practices throwing the ball to this player, like that is noteworthy, right? That's a relationship that's forming. Whether that's Kincaid, Coleman, Shakir, all up and down the lineup, you know. Allen's talking about body language out there when he's praising Josh Palmer. He's talking body language. If he's noticing that kind of stuff, that could be body language when something goes well, something goes bad. It could also be what he does with his shoulders when he's trying to sell a safety or blah, blah. So, you know, you're out here practicing, yes, but for the pass catchers, you're looking to impress number 17 and show him, I'm worth your throw. I'm worth your look.
Right. It would be timing stuff, of course. It's important as well. I wonder how much off-structure things they would work on at this point of the year, too. Like, who's Josh picking out when he's scrambling, when he's rolling out of the pocket? Who's he looking for?
Usually,
who's working back to the football?
Well, that's because that's not who he's picking. Because usually he's looking for whoever is going down the field.
That's
Ray Davis down there. He doesn't care who it is.
That's right.
I mean,
who was he throwing to when Coleman caught it against the Jets? Wasn't it Ty Johnson?
Yeah.
And he did that again against Denver.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, the most famous maybe of all is Pat DeMarco. Don't care.
Remember the play?
I know that's a different version
Pat
of Josh.
DeMarco.
And I'm not saying it is something.
No,
that's
part of it.
It's something I don't like. You know, I always want to give him somebody down there.
Yeah.
The only play they hit against Baltimore in the game they lost 35-10 was a shot to Shakir.
Right. Right.
He's looking for, when it's broken, he's looking for deep breaks.
Remember the play against the Lions where he gets smoked along the sidelines, and right before that, like, he's out at the sideline, and he's pointing to Coleman. Like, go. Like, keep going. And then he launches it down the field.
You had a Gabe touchdown in the opener against the Rams on a broken play like that where it's
– Yeah. I guess you're right. Like, these recent examples are all down the field. I don't know. Like, I have this recollection of when Davis is playing and it's Diggs and it's John Brown that whenever those guys were catching off structure, like, they're working back to the ball.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the type of player – That it is, maybe it's where you're coming from, right? Why are Ray Davis and Ty Johnson running down the field?
Because
where are they running from?
Yeah, they are short.
They're running from short. The only place they have to run is down the field. What about the guys that are down the field? They're coming back, and maybe that's Palmer. Palmer's a separator. Maybe Palmer would be the guy that, you know, if Josh is running away, he doesn't always have to launch it deep because he's got that guy that's working back to him.
Yeah. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550 if you'd like to join us. Strange story out of Vegas with Christian Wilkins, right? Like,
I have no idea what to make of the update on that. It felt like, okay, this all makes sense. He got cut. It was a dispute over
medical,
how he rehabbed his injury, and a belief that maybe it wouldn't heal properly, and they used that rehab dispute as a way to get out of the contract. But then now what do I have? Kissed a teammate on the top of the head?
Yeah. You have Schefter talking to McAfee about this.
Yeah.
And the way that Schefter is delivering the claim, like he kissed a teammate on the top of the head and the teammate got offended and went to HR. When Schefter is initially saying that to McAfee, he looks over and reads it off of a phone or a screen and almost kind of to make sure, let me make sure I get exactly what I've been told here because –
Yeah,
it is very odd. It's very odd. I mean,
especially as a reason why he would be released outright.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Schefter kind of painted it as a look into some of the problems that were going on with Christian Wilkins. So, it's odd. It's very odd. Josh has it here. Okay, here's Schefter with McAfee.
From speaking to people inside the locker room, I think what everybody's dancing around and tiptoeing around is the fact that when you speak to people there inside the locker room, they say that Christian playfully went to kiss a teammate on top of his head, and those same people said that that player took offense to it. So that's what everybody's been dancing around and tap dancing around, an incident in the locker room where he allegedly, playfully kissed a teammate on top of his head. That teammate felt offended by it. And that's what a lot of this talk and speculation that people have just been floating around out there is about.
All right. One of the odder NFL stories we'll get this year.
That's a very strange update.
Right?
On it. I don't even know, like, okay.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
It is an odd story. NFL.com.
HR locker room stories in general.
Yeah,
once you hear, like, when's the last time you heard HR in NFL locker room in the first, like,
Incognito and Jonathan Martin?
There you go.
Like, is that it?
And that is.
A decade ago?
Decade ago.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen, because I'm sure it does and we don't find out about it, but just very strange on that.
Yep. Traylon Burks, first rounder for the Titans, waived.
Never really worked for him.
All-time worst trades, it's up there.
A.J. Brown.
It's all-time. It's up there. You know, it's funny.
He's the sixth receiver taken in that draft.
It's the opposite of – well, I shouldn't say the opposite, but – forever we had the Diggs-Jefferson trade. Like, oh, you could have just taken the receiver. Like, that's right, you could have done that. And sometimes when you do that, the receiver you take isn't good.
Right.
And the Titans, I guess, decided, like, yeah, we'll just take the receiver instead. And, I mean, shout out Matt Harmon, receptionperception.com. Like, he's like, this guy's not good. Burks, to me, there was never any idea that Treylon Burks was going to be good, and he never was. And then
he's by far, I mean, among, I guess actually the guy that went right ahead of him is not great either, but in that receiver class, like, it's not even close. He's the worst one. Drake London, great.
Great.
Garrett Wilson.
Great.
Chris Olave.
Great, but, you know, needs to put it together and stay healthy.
And then Jameson Williams, who's good, I think.
I think when he's just, Jameson Williams
just
is
on the field.
He's a role player. He's a role player. He's not a full-time receiver. He's a role player, and he's dynamic.
But he's very dangerous.
To me, Jameson Williams, I would almost make a comparison in, again, not the way they play really at all, but that's what I kind of expect Keon Coleman to be. Role that is exploitable, usable. Not going to be ever Garrett Wilson or Chris Olave. Never going to be Drake London, but – oh, no, we've got this thing that we use in our offense, and when we use it, they're just like, what are we supposed to do about that? Jameson Williams, his is just, what, ungodly speed?
Sure. He had 1,000 yards last year on 91 targets.
That's right.
91 targets.
That's a role player that Ben Johnson found a way to just like, man, this is going to work. I had a stat for you.
And then Jahan Dotson was the one other guy.
Dotson.
He's not good, but he did make a big catch in the Super Bowl.
I saw one thing on the Bears this year and on Ben Johnson. See if I can pull it up here, if I can find it. That people with the Bears are going to – here you go. From Jacob Infante, who wrote this, that the Bears and their fans, lead NFL draft analyst, and he writes a Bears blog, be patient, he says. You have to be patient with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams. Like, put it in – write it down right now that if they start slow – it doesn't mean it's going to fail. Mm-hmm. The Lions, in the first year, Ben Johnson was their offensive coordinator, started 1-6. And like Goff found it and then all of a sudden became like, oh, this offense is unstoppable. They started 1-6 and they finished 8-2. And Jacob Infante basically wrote, 8-9 for the Bears is a good year. Like, if they get that done and it starts to come, that's a sign it's working. Don't freak out too early on the Bears on Ben Johnson. So,
8-9 though being a good season for them
in that division. You've got three powerhouses in the division. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough, but man, year two for the quarterback, and you got good talent around them, and I guess they did only win 5 games last year. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's just, to me, it's about division. If they're in the, let's be real, in the AFC East, they might want to go.
They're in the
NFC South, 10-7.
Maybe it sounds different.
Yeah, but that's 6 games against the Lions, the Packers, and the Vikings, who were all playoff teams last year.
That division is good.
You want the rest of their?
It's not. I mean, each one of those teams has a question. The Lions lost both their coordinators. The Packers, what's an elite thing the Packers have? Like, on their whole roster. They're good, no doubt.
Their quarterback's really good.
And then Minnesota, like, I don't know. They have a quarterback that that in college was hidden by his offense.
He's
going to walk in there and be – McCarthy maybe is the biggest thing for me. I love O'Connell. I love the Vikings. But, I mean, that
JJ
guy, his college offense hid him. And he's just going to show up and lead them to what, 12 wins?
Just quickly, do you know who they play?
The Bears?
Yeah.
No.
They play the AFC North.
That's tough.
That's tough. It's Baltimore, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland. They play San Francisco. They play Philadelphia. They play Cincinnati.
That's tough.
They play Washington.
That's tough.
And maybe 8-9 is a good year for them. It's tough. Joe Marino of the Lockdown Bills podcast, he'll be joining us coming up. And Bobby Babbage at 9:15, Bills defensive coordinator. Jeremy and Joe, live from St. John Fisher here on WGR.
Right now, and look, I get there's a lot of time that needs to play out. We haven't even touched a preseason game. There's a lot of camp. There's a lot of practices. Right now, I think it's going to be a hard sell for me to believe that Trey White's not your week one starter.
That is Mr. Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast. He said that yesterday on the Bills squad show. which is part of your Locked On Bills channel. And on YouTube, you can find that. And I told Josh to pull that because I think that's a little bit of a growing sentiment. Jeremy and Joe here with Mr. Joe Marino, who joins us from St. John Fisher. You know, not a red flag about Max Harrison, more of a testament to Trey White looks like he's been pretty good.
Yeah, honestly, I've been really impressed with Tre'Davious White, and I didn't know what to expect when the Bills signed him with kind of the recent few years that he's had with injuries, and then last year he was healthy, but, you know, the Rams had him for four games, and they said that'll be all. Send him on his way, and he goes to the Ravens, spends a lot of time on the practice squad, and he gets time in their dime packages, and he started to look better, but you know, didn't really know if he'd be back in a spot where he'd be a full-time player in the NFL, but this feels like the right opportunity for him at this point in his career, and I think he's met the moment. Obviously, he's played well himself, but you can just tell there's a leadership component that he brings to this team. I mean, he does his rep, and then he is just literally coaching every single player on the field when he's done with his opportunities, and you know, he's in Maxwell Harrison's ear a lot, he's in Christian Benford's ear a lot, all the young players, and he's bringing a lot to this football team, but I just haven't seen enough yet from Maxwell Harrison that makes me think that he's a realistic guy to start in week one. Now, there's a lot of time that needs to play out. We just had our first padded practice yesterday. There's an entire preseason. But I think right now my thought is that Trey White is not going to be easy to set aside and put Maxwell Harrison on the field.
For anyone that might, you know, be nervous, we already got a comment in the chat on YouTube that that is a red flag or it's another Kyer Elam situation. Why is it not that?
Well, I think Maxwell Harrison's doing plenty of good. It's just up and down. And the consistency that he needs to find is should be expected, right? I mean, he's a young player. He's a first-round pick, but he's never played in the NFL. If he came out here and had everything figured out from day one, that'd be pretty surprising. That's an unrealistic expectation. And so I think he's being coached through some things. I think he's learning about the physicality in the NFL. I saw several reps against Keon Coleman where, you know, he's really trying to be physical with him, and that's really not his game, right? I think he just has to find his way, and I think we'll see it little by little, but this will be my third practice of the week, and I thought there was growth from, you know, the first practice, the second practice, and it's just about staying that course and continuing to show what he can do, but he's got to find some consistency.
Do you feel like – I almost don't think it'll get to this point. Both Tre'Davious White and Christian Benford have had their injury problems, that if it were White and Benford to start the season – you know, how long it would take for Harrison to get in there, or even if it would, you know, if White comes in and looks the part and is trustworthy and he doesn't look like – it does look like the athletic profile is still there enough that Harrison might not get in anytime soon, but it would be because the guys ahead of him aren't giving him any reason to get in there.
I think the Bills have done a good job of knowing when the right time is to play these young players. I think about Spencer Brown, that Houston game. Was it week four or week five? All of a sudden, you find out, boom, this is the starting offensive line. And it was the right time for Spencer Brown to step into there. Terrell Bernard, for him to kind of have the year of onboarding that he did. And never finding the time for Kyer Elam felt like the right idea, right? So I think they've done a good job of knowing when is the appropriate time to play him. And I think they'll have to have the right idea with Maxwell Harrison. And, you know, I think this team just – it's like you could – on one hand – maybe wish that Maxwell Harrison was firmly coming in here and claiming the job. But on the other side of that is this team has depth at corner. And it's been a while since that's been true. And the depth has been stressed late in the season the last several years, whether it's been Tre'Davious White not being available. Christian Benford's not been available really for the last two Chiefs playoff losses. And so I think that's kind of your silver lining is maybe Harrison's not everything right away, but you've got depth for the first time in a long time at corner that you feel pretty good about.
Depth seems to be a conversation pretty much up and down the roster. Like they've got it, of course, in spades on the offensive line. At receiver, we're seeing these names come in. And, Joe, it's a departure from last year where these names that would come in will be, well, maybe they can make a difference. And now it's like these guys don't have a chance. It looks like they're pretty well stocked one through five. So I feel like would you say that about the whole roster, that the depth on the roster is maybe as good as it's been?
Well, 9 years into McDermott and Bean, you'd like to think that you're kind of at that point where that's what you're trying to figure out is depth and, you know, really finding areas where you can elevate. But it's a different part of a life cycle of a team where this isn't year one, two, or three. This is well established. They're kind of into another nucleus under the same regime. And so I think that's kind of where the roster turns. It's not New England or Washington or what Houston came through or Arizona. This is a well-established operation. And so – I think that's kind of where these conversations are going to be rooted.
Is there any position right now where you are wondering about the depth?
Quarterback.
Quarterback.
quarterback. Is, well, I think there's a legit battle there between Trubisky and White.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe you could convince me White's been slightly better out here, but I think any gap would be marginal. I think Mike White probably throws a better, more accurate football, but, you know, there's athletic limitations there. You watch his footwork. Those feet are heavy, you know, like looking like Matt Ryan trying to get in his drops. He's just not very mobile, but that's kind of where Mitchell Trubisky picks up the slack, but then maybe White just has a little bit more when he's actually throwing the football in terms of placement and some timing stuff. So the challenge there is I feel like Trubisky's the one that has the big-time relationship with Josh Allen, which we know is an important part of the quarterback depth conversation here. And but the other side of that is the Bills would gain $1 million in cap space if they were to go with White over Trubisky. So I think that's a real battle that's going to play itself out in preseason, but the reality is I don't love either option. And maybe the real answer there is Josh Allen just needs to continue to be the most durable quarterback in the NFL.
You know, we're watching a couple practices, five practices in. Injuries have been a storyline. Kincaid out with a knee, Samuel the hamstring. You know, nothing sounds too serious, but I feel like maybe we have flashbacks to last year where so-and-so missed the start of camp, and because of that, they're behind. And for Allen, you know, one thing you and I've talked about a lot is building chemistry with Kincaid, how important that is for those to have chemistry. And for him to be out right now is unfortunate.
Very much. And it feels like that's been a quiet conversation before he was injured. It was like, how's Kincaid looking out here? And I thought for the two practices that I saw him, I thought things looked good. A lot of good runaway routes from linebackers. And the play he got injured on was a really nice deep opportunity on a corner route that was – he found some space between Rapp and Milano, and then that ball was in the air just a little bit longer than you thought, and all of a sudden it's a contested situation, and he got contact from both sides, and he finished a practice, but obviously, you know, he wasn't available yesterday. We don't know what today holds, but I think that's what's hard to gauge is, like, how serious is any of this? Is the team just saying, hey, it's July, we don't have a game until September, there's a lot of important players on this list, we need to be cautious, or is it stuff that is going to linger and be a problem? So I understand both sides of the coin. And, you know, the first thing Sean McDermott says after he talks about injuries, he goes, I'm not getting into timetables. Okay, well, I guess we'll just have to speculate and wonder and probably lean into being concerned.
Yeah. The one thing about that is it doesn't sound like – but, again, like, part of that is not knowing. Anybody that is, like, being talked about as, like, a missing time in the regular season candidate. Here's the Cowboys who lose their left tackle yesterday. Yeah. And I guess the positive news would be, I don't know if there's anyone on this list where I'm worried about that, but at what point would you? Like, with we asked this to Sal, like, how long would Spencer Brown have to be out before we start getting, like, really worried about his status with it being a back injury that he's had in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think about Terrell Bernard. I was talking to Joe Biscaglia about this the other day. Terrell Bernard, the year that he was his second season when he was going to become the starter, he had an injury that kept him out of, like, the last 3 weeks of camp. And then all of a sudden he was still the starter over Tyrell Dotson, even though Tyrell Dotson was the healthy player stepping in there. So I think that, you know, for as much as there are true competitions that need to play out, I think there's probably a direction that the team sees this going. But, yeah, I mean, the closer we get to the season and guys aren't practicing is when I think you start to find some concern. But I guess the silver lining right now is that it's, what, July 29th. So hopefully there's still plenty of time.
We talked about Harrison. Let's dig through the rest of the rookie class. TJ Sanders, Landon Jackson, and Deion Walker, three players on that defensive front. What have you seen so far?
Well, I think they've all been really, like, high energy. They've been hard charging, pursuing hard. I think we had one padded practice, and I certainly tried to watch as much of them as I possibly could, but you don't have as big enough of a sample size to really say this guy really looks good. I think right now I can praise the effort. I can praise the energy. I can praise the athleticism. I thought they've all moved extremely well. But, you know, getting a real gauge for where the technique is at and where the impact could lie, I think we'll need a few more practices to really know. I'll say with Deion Walker, the Bills ran a lot of zone runs, stretch-type plays yesterday in practice, and I thought his ability to work laterally was pretty impressive out there. And then, you know, I think the get off with Sanders and Landon Jackson in terms of getting off the ball, you know, there wasn't much hesitation. They were intentional with getting off the snap. So I think those are, like, little good things, but not enough of a sample size to really get a full gauge, but that'll be a priority for me today and Thursday and Friday.
Anything from Jackson Hawes stand out first day with pads on? I don't know. Like, he, of course, more of a blocking tight end. Seen him make a couple of catches.
Yeah.
And the two guys ahead of him on the depth chart have been missing time with injuries, so there's that too.
He's tenacious, right? I mean, like, getting a chance to be on the field and just looking at him, you can just tell he's got something about him where you don't want to get in a fight with that guy. And he's brought it quite a bit, so – I think he's been as advertised, and I think it's been good to see some of the receiving ability there. You know, obviously kind of a basic menu, but at some level of involvement because they have to, right? There's no Kincaid and Knox out there. Sokol was signed last week. I mean, what, this is a true statement. Jackson Hawes, in terms of available tight ends, is the most experienced player on this team.
Yeah.
So he's getting a lot of run, I think that's only helpful for him. But obviously you want to see, is it 88 and 86 out there with Josh Allen?
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, joining us here on WGR from St. John Fisher. One thing I'll be watching today, Keon Coleman's been stacking practices, stacking good performances and breakout performances.
Yeah, he's the last two practices, I thought he's really, really good, especially the Sunday practice. One thing that really stood out to me yesterday was a lot of scramble drill opportunities for Josh Allen. He's looking for zero. And once it was a great rollout completion. The other, he chucked it into double coverage. Bishop and Tre'Davious White kind of closed on the ball. And I think because they both closed on the ball, neither intercepted it. But one of them should have. But he's looking for zero for sure on those scramble drills. And then I thought the Sunday practice is where you saw more of the cerebral, savvy, find space, you know, use the frame to kind of box out and be a – you know, that towering type player that they drafted him to be. So I think it's been two good days for Keon. It's not without some inconsistency. Like, he beat Maxwell Harrison clean on a vertical route yesterday and decided to one-hand it for no reason and didn't catch the ball. So, you know, some little things like that to clean up, but I think I've mostly been really satisfied with where he's trending.
Feels like there's a little bit I've heard a lot of the intellectual part of the game for Keon. Is it something you saw in the scouting going back and then last year as well?
Yeah. I would agree with you, Jeremy, that it feels like whether it's Joe Brady, didn't he call him like one of the smartest receivers he's ever been with? I think Josh Allen's been praising like the football IQ. That's been a message.
Yeah.
It feels kind of intentional. Coming out of Florida State, I mean, that's a real basic offense, you know. So I don't know that you could look at it and say, wow, high football IQ or not. And last year, I think where you would believe that to be true is that for a rookie, extremely young player, was he 20, 21 years old last year? Very, very young, and we all know that not even a guy that's been full-time in football for that long. He, when he was healthy, played a ton of snaps, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he was the highest snap taker for this receiver corps, and they played him at a bunch of different spots. So I think the messaging now is pretty loud and clear, but I think when you look back to last year, what they trusted him to do kind of aligns with all of that.
Flies in the face of that occasional narrative that McDermott's afraid to play rookies. They just have to earn his trust.
Right.
And Coleman would have done that last year.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true. And they wanted him on the field even when he came back from injury, where the impact wasn't the same. He still played a lot of snaps. And maybe a lot of that was the what do they call them, the Joe Brady routes, the for love of the game routes. But he ran them, you know, and they've had him on the field to do that. So I feel like that's maybe an unexpected part of his game that's being celebrated. And that's good because that's going to keep him on the field and that's going to get targets and that's going to allow him to be a playmaker.
Do you agree with the perception through the first week or so of camp from what you've seen that Christian Benford looks like the best player out there?
Oh, absolutely. This guy is taking names. I mean, watching him in one-on-ones yesterday, my goodness. I mean, technician's the word I think that you can easily identify, but it's the competitive spirit that he has like post-snap. He's chirping a little bit out there, and I think KJ Hamler brings that out of a lot of guys. I didn't realize how much of a yapper that guy was, but you know, Christian Benford is an alpha. He's a dog out there. I mean, the technique is obvious, but just the way he backs it up, his demeanor, his temperament. You know, I've been in on Benford. It feels like for a while, and he just continues to ascend. I think he's still got a lot more to show us.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. Where else can people find you? Everywhere. Everywhere.
You know, Locked On Bills, Locked On NFL Scouting, Bill Squad with you and Jerry Ostrowski, NFL First Read. Mm-hmm. Thankful to have a lot of opportunities to talk football.
Yeah. You and Kyle Krabs on that NFL Scouting podcast, right?
Yeah. We did a podcast yesterday assembling the worst possible starting lineup using actual position groups in the NFL.
Okay.
So that was fun. We're going to do the opposite of that today. We're going to do the best. But you can only use every team one time. And the challenge is that the Raiders, they had a conversation four or five times. Yeah. You only can use them once. So that was fun if you want to feel really good about the Bills. Listen to that one.
Who is the worst group, worst offensive line of football?
Houston. Yeah, which is, my goodness, after all they did, that's not where you want to be. But
felt like they were that last year and they didn't fix it.
Well, they traded their most talented lineman. Right.
They changed a lot. I'm not sure. I'm telling you, I don't think it is better. Maybe the scheme will help. But, for that team to have that quarterback at this point in their build, that's not where you want to be having concerns. But I just don't like the collection of talent at all.
Receivers, Tennessee?
Okay.
Ridley's good. Past that, nothing. Like, who else is?
But they've got Ridley, but.
Well, this is where you'd love to put the Raiders. Their number one receiver is Jacoby Myers, and I love Jacoby Myers, but he's not a one. Yeah. I went with the Panthers.
Okay.
Because.
So unproven?
Well, yeah, and the other teams that I wanted to use, I had to use for other spots. And with the Panthers, it's completely unproven. Tet McMillan's a top 10 pick. We don't know. Xavier Leggett didn't really impress as a rookie.
No.
Late stage Adam Thielen.
This Hunter Renfro comeback story, we're not into it enough yet.
I don't know.
I don't know.
So they're just everything's I don't know with Carolina. It felt like a good team to slot in there, but there were some contenders. I wanted to put the Jets, but Garrett Wilson as an individual player,
he was awesome.
I can't do that.
Their second receiver is Josh Reynolds. Who is there?
Alan Lazard, Josh Reynolds. Yeah, that's not serious, right?
No. Yeah. All right. Joe Marino, you can catch him everywhere, all those places you just listed. Bill Squad Show, Locked On Bills Podcast, Locked On NFL Scouting. Thanks for the time. We'll see you out there.
Of course. Thank you, guys.
All right. Well, to get a break in, Bobby Babich, Bills defensive coordinator, joins us at 9:15 here on WGR. Hey, listen all this week for your chance to win a pair of grandstand tickets to the NASCAR Cup Series weekend from Friday, August 8th to Sunday, August 10th at Watkins Glen International. Go bowling at the Glen brings the drivers of the NASCAR Cup Series to battle it around the historic New York Road Course. Tickets on sale for the entire NASCAR weekend at theglen.com. Go bowling at the Glen. It's the first time that another sport has used another sport to advertise for its sport. This is a NASCAR race sponsored by GoBowling.com.
That would be like if the Stanley Cup Final presented by the National Football League.
Yeah, right.
In a way.
But more likely flip that around, right?
Yeah, it'd be the other way around.
Yeah, the NHL's bought the rights to
shouldn't they do that?
Please watch the Super Bowl 50.
Hey, the halftime show.
Super Bowl 61 halftime show is brought to you by Please Watch Hockey.
The National Hockey League. They should do that, shouldn't they?
Yeah. I've got a very quick story about how old I am in a minute. I'll tell you on the other side. It's one of those things where I've started a thing.
How old you are? What are you doing?
It's probably one of these like, you're becoming an old person now. Yeah, I got that for you today.
Also, I've got some DVOA Super Bowl odds and Aaron Schatz's football almanac. And there are two teams that are really far down the list that their fans are going to probably go nuclear on.
Oh, good. Excited about that.
Yeah.
803-0550. You can give us a ring. You can comment on the chat on our YouTube channel. You can stay tuned. Bills defensive coordinator Bobby Babich, 9:15 today here. We'll sit down with us at St. John Fisher. And I'm ready. He's been with Trey White since 2017. He would have seen White at his peak, see him come back. So we'll ask him plenty about Trey White and how that's going. Max Hairston, he's got a lot of rookies to deal with as well. So the Bills DC coming up 9:15 here on WGR.